All right, well, let's go ahead and get started, you guys. Good evening. My name is Chris Nehote, and I'm here with others from Women in Recovery. We are just so thrilled that you could be with us this evening. We are here in person, but we also have people attending over Zoom. So welcome to our Zoom guests as well. So tonight we are going to be starting on our first of a two-part series with Bill Gebengreen, who's going to be talking to us about the study of the Enneagram. And tonight we're going to be focusing on and celebrating what's good about us, what's right about us. And so what a great way to start this study. Before we get started, I just have a couple of housekeeping items. First of all, for those of us attending here at the church, I want to point out that the women's restroom is over here to your right. There's also additional restrooms in the door right behind. For our Zoom guests, I just want to be sure that you guys are aware that in order to keep a safe environment for everyone, we ask that when joining the meeting that you identify yourself by including your first name and your last initial, and to please be sure that your video is turned on. Your toolbar is located at either the bottom or the right-hand side of your screen, depending on your device. Your toolbar will allow you to access the chat window, which is where we'll be posting information pertaining to tonight's presentation. You can post questions in the chat at any time during the presentation. There will be a time for questions at the end of the presentation. And Phil's also going to be pausing periodically to invite questions here from our audience. Phil has also provided some handouts for this evening. Perhaps those of you were able to pick up the handouts when you arrived. We will be distributing those during our announcements. For those of you that are attending over Zoom, those handouts can be accessed on the retreat's website at the Women in Recovery link. There's also a link that's going to be posted in the chat window. We've muted everyone on the Zoom room in order to minimize audio distractions, so your audio is turned off by default. Now, let's open with a moment of silence. Thank you. Growth opportunities for women in 12-step recovery programs. We come together to learn and grow around issues that universally affect us all. Please note that this is not a 12-step meeting, nor is it a replacement for a 12-step program. If you'd like to learn more about Women in Recovery and upcoming programs, see the retreat's website on Women in Recovery's or on Women in Recovery's Facebook page. Those are being posted in the Zoom chat window as well. And I want to especially invite you to attend the retreat's gala. It's going to be held on Saturday, October 22nd, and this year we are going to be honoring one of the co-founders of Women in Recovery. Andrea Bruner is going to be receiving the George Mann Award. The retreat's gala will be held in person as well as over Zoom, so please do go to the retreat's website to get more information about how you can attend in either format. A couple of quick announcements. The Women in Recovery book group meets virtually on the second Thursday of each month. The next book group will be meeting on Thursday, October 13th at 6:30 to discuss the book, Atomic Habits, an easy, proven way to build good habits and break bad ones. The author is James Clear. Please feel free to attend the book group, whether you've read the book or not. It's always a really beautiful discussion. This will be the final book group meeting for 2022. And the group has decided to take a pause in 2023 as we reflect on ways to continue to offer spiritual growth and connection to the women that we serve. So please email wir@theretreat.org with any questions or comments you have regarding our book group. For those of you that may have noticed last month, we got together and we read portions of this book. It is The Wisdom of the Enneagram, written by Don Richard Rizzo and Russ Hudson. It's one of the books that Phil recommended reading as a way of preparing ourselves for the study that we're about to embark on. So if you haven't had an opportunity to take a look at that book, you might want to take a look at it. If you'd like to receive emails on upcoming Women in Recovery events, please write your first and last name and your email address on the clipboard that we'll be distributing. For those of you that are attending over Zoom, you can add this information in the chat window. We do need first and last names, so if you're comfortable, please include this information. Otherwise, a Women in Recovery board member will follow up with you and get it at that time. Of course, we're always welcoming new volunteers to our organization. And if you've been attending Women in Recovery events, you may have thought about ways that you would like to be of service. So please indicate this on the clipboard. There's a box to the right-hand side where you can indicate whether or not you'd like to become involved. We are currently seeking volunteers for our marketing committee and our program planning committee, as well as a few other areas, and we'd love to hear from you. So we are also going to be passing a basket for contributions to help cover our expenses. And it is in this spirit where a donation button has been added to the retreat's website. And as with all 12-step meetings, no contributions are necessary. We really appreciate any and all contributions. So thank you. And now let's get started with tonight's presentation. Women in Recovery is pleased to welcome Phil Gevin Green, who will be introducing us to the Enneagram process as a tool in understanding ourselves based on 9 distinct personality types. Phil is a lifelong learner and teacher interested in the really big questions like, why do we do what we do? And what if love is the only real thing? He's a Presbyterian co-pastor with his wife, Luna, and teaches with the Enneagram Prison Project. So please, everyone, help me give a warm welcome to Phil Gevin Green.
Thank you, Women in Recovery, for having me. My name is Phil, and I'm addicted to my personality. No, you missed your cue. Let me try that again. My name is Phil, and I'm addicted to my personality. There we go. Thank you. And I don't really say that as a joke. I'm sitting there, sitting right there, listening to Chris, and starting to get like fluttery inside. Fluttery thinking how important this work is to me. What do I mean this work? I don't even necessarily mean the Enneagram. I mean like recovery. Like I want to recover myself. And that there's other people who want to. My favorite, I had taught the Enneagram for quite a while in, ready, church basements. And then I got the opportunity to teach at Shakopee Women's Prison. Guess which was better? If you've really got your act together and you want to be just a little bit better human being by understanding your Enneagram type, this presentation is not for you. Read a book, you know, practice a little bit, learn, you know, like when I learned, oh, I'm like both an introvert and an extrovert. And it helped me for about 10 seconds. And then I was kind of over that. Like it did not change my life. This work changes my life. This work, what if there is nothing wrong with you? Absolutely ludicrous. Okay, everyone list all the, just in your head, list all the things that are clearly wrong with you. And now just ask yourself again, what if there is nothing wrong with you? The Enneagram can be used to absolutely rip yourself apart. Oh, I'm a type 8 and I'm way too intense and I bulldoze over people and I'm bossy and I have like overwhelmed my kids over and over and over again. My oldest son was born in the year 2000, 22 years ago. And after 4 days, I was absolutely ruined. I thought I was ready, but my wife and I, we had planned for kids. We were ready. It wasn't a surprise. And by day four, I was a wreck. And I know I'm talking to people who were like more of a wreck than I was, but I felt like completely a wreck. So it was the middle of the night and my kid is up. Didn't realize at the time he had a twisted intestine, so he couldn't eat. So then he couldn't sleep and he was miserable, but I didn't know that. I just knew he was making me miserable. He had taken over my life and he was making me miserable. And so trying to give my wife a little break, I'm walking through the living room of our apartment and I want to throw this child across the room. I want this child to be gone. Fortunately, I could take the child back to my wife and lay him down ready for breastfeeding, whether it was time or not, and get this child out of my hands. You know, this child just turned 22 at the end of July. That's the end of the story. It all turns out okay. But there, but for the grace of God, go I. I have an anger problem, and I'm addicted to my anger. And without help, see, and it's so lovely to talk to people in recovery because you all get this so quickly, that the Enneagram is really just another tool like the 12 steps to do this work of recovery. But when I could see, oh, my anger is actually for me. It's not for killing my son, but it's trying to tell me something. What if there's nothing wrong with me? Now, do I mean, oh, that's fine. That's great. It's beautiful that I wanted to throw my kid across the, you know, against the wall on the other. No, no, no. But that I fundamentally am okay. And what if I could just listen to myself? Everybody take a deep breath. It's all the Enneagram is trying to do, is to get us to love and understand ourselves enough to recover our birthright. Just like that beautiful son of mine who was not trying to attack me, he was trying to stay alive. The next morning he threw up bright green bile on my shoulder. We thought, that's not right. Took him to the hospital. He was in surgery by that afternoon. It was a long recovery, but it all turned out it was great. His crying was trying to tell me something. My anger was trying to tell me something. Our shame is trying to tell us something. Our fear is trying to tell us something. And it's not trying to tell us, keep being fearful every second. It's the only way you'll stay alive. It's just trying to say, hey, listen, isn't it a good thing that our fear tells us, oh, you might want to look that way before crossing the street because there's a Mack truck coming. Thank you, fear. And so then do I need to be scared of streets for the rest of my life? No, I just need to listen to my fear. Do I need to be angry to get anything done? No, I do not. But when anger comes up, I can listen. Shame. Oh, I'm not connected to the people around me in the way I want to be connected, and I'm worried that maybe it's my fault. That's trying to tell me how important connection is to me. Does it mean I should live every moment of my life in shame? No, it doesn't. Everyone take a deep breath again. I know I'm kind of like a fire hose. This is just going to keep coming right at you, okay? You're a fire hose too. Notice how many thoughts you're thinking. Notice how many thoughts you're thinking about me. Notice how many thoughts you're thinking about the people around you. Notice how when you giggle, you wonder what the people around you are thinking about your giggle. Notice what you're thinking about. Like I said, you don't have to be fearful every moment. You're probably stuck on that. Or maybe it was shame, or maybe it was anger, or maybe it's all of them. Notice that, the first quote on the first page is the longest journey is the journey inward. And like I put that on there and I thought, oh, does that actually sound like bad news? But what it's saying is like, this is exactly the work we're supposed to be doing. We're not in here being lazy, avoiding the stuff that is really supposed to be done. We are the work. It's the old, you know, unless you put the oxygen mask on yourself, we go around trying to put oxygen. If you would just be like I need you to be, my life would be so much better. Everyone else, oh my goodness, does that person need oxygen? And does that person need oxygen? And like, we're not breathing. Take a deep breath. Okay, I'm just going to say this one. I can't even talk about it because it's so crazy. Everything outside of you is a reflection of yourself. Everything. I know that's super crazy. Thank you for the skeptical look. I appreciate that. I still don't believe that either. What it offers is this. What if I am not a victim of the world I see? What if I am fully empowered to live my life every moment, and that I then get to decide, oh, my son is crying. How do I want to respond to that? Oh, I'm feeling like I want to throw my son across the room. How do I want to respond to that? And every moment I get to, the sort of heavy way to say it is to take self-responsibility. But it just means even like I get to exist in my own skin, in my own heart, in my own mind, to notice what I'm thinking. Oh, instead of like, you know, Phil said, I don't have to be fearful every moment. And instead, I could have a conversation inside of me like, wow, I'm fearful every moment. Isn't that fascinating? Or like shame. I just like am drenched in from the minute I wake up to the minute I go to bed, and I probably dream in shame. Fascinating. And it's a little bit more like watching our kids or watching a friend. We can just watch ourselves. This is what I'm choosing. So the Enneagram then is just a path of freedom that gives us a little bit more knowledge or experience to say, okay, how do I want to be in the world? From the time I was 3, 4, or 5, and that's when our personalities form, I realized, my like just being Phil in the world was not completely and fully accepted by everyone around me. And so sometimes it was like, shh, be quiet, or shh, Phil, sit still. Or my dad was a pastor. And when I was really, really young, we would sit in the balcony. Whenever my dad would say amen, I would say amen. Cute, until it's not. And so then, shh, Phil, shh. Have a piece of candy. Something. So candy, it's delicious. I liked that as a kid, but it's also a way to shut me down. And so I learned, oh, like sugar. Sugar is a way to be acceptable in the world. There's one of my like key life voices. Okay, like that's such a key life voice for me that then I have like 48 stories about it. And some of them are right here, right? And so then shame, right? And then like fear, am I going to like die of a heart attack? Like I just go on and on and on, spin. I'm like, oh, Phil, come on back. I'm just with these lovely people. We're trying to recover. I'm trying to recover. Parents who mostly loved me, but also didn't really see me. But also I did hear, I don't even know where these voices came from, but I heard voices like, I'll give you something to cry about. So could Phil just cry and that be okay? Apparently not. And now, you know, my family could probably count on two or three fingers how many times they've seen me cry. I'm trying to recover. So start taking just a little bit deeper breaths, right? Just kind of notice your breath. And as you notice your breathing, can we just go back a little bit within ourselves? Can we start to remember the little person, the little Phil, the little whoever is inside? That's before the fear. That's before the shame, that's before the anger, and is just saying what? What is that little self saying to you? My little self was saying to me, I just want to be me. Somebody else? Did you hear a voice from your little self? Anybody? Actual question. Did you? Are you willing to share what it was?
Sitting in the Baptist church with my grandmother, singing Jesus Loves
Me. Jesus loves me.
I don't know why that happened.
Yeah. I remember that going way back to, and I know all of you might not have been raised in a Christian church as the two of us apparently were, but something just so simple, like, oh, I heard that as a kid too. Oh, Jesus loves me. That's simple. Religion does not feel that simple to me anymore. Maybe, what if it's all that simple? I'm loved by the love of the universe. Did anyone else have a clear voice of any kind? You raising your hand or you just scratching your shoulder? Did you have a voice? No. Yes.
Mine said, you're okay.
Mine said, you're okay. Yes.
Mine said, why are they treating me?
Why are they treating me like this? This does not make any sense to me. I can feel inside of myself. And I'm talking like, sort of like pre-memory, back when we all just have, most of us have this really fuzzy memory of being so small and going way back and like, this makes no sense at all, this whole way the world is set up. Why can't we just be? And how I'm being treated right there, that hurts. Hurts physically, it hurts emotionally. Something. Let's take a step of recovery together. Hello, by the way, to the people on Zoom. How many people are on Zoom? 18 people. So glad you're here. And you know, when I ask questions, feel free to put, you know, write them in the chat or something too, if something comes up for you. So in this spirit, here's how we're going to do the Enneagram. We're going to look at the Enneagram just means nine. It's a nine-part figure. It's that circle with a triangle in it. And then the blue line that bounces all over the place. In some ways, when we say the Enneagram, that's what we mean. The other thing we mean is that there are nine types, nine kind of patterns that we tend to fall into. It also is this sense of there are 9 amazing gifts that the world gives to us. And so I'm going to just talk through these beautiful gifts. The very first time I went to Shakopee Prison, it was my job. I was with 2 other teachers, but the 3 of us, and it was my job to do just a quick run through the 9 types. And there was 15 minutes scheduled for it, which is way too quick to run through the 9 types. But it happened to be National Severe Weather Awareness Day. And so 30 minutes into our class and the sirens all go off. It's my very first time in prison ever. And so I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. The women all go out, and we come back with a half an hour left of a 3-hour class. So we had a half an hour at the beginning. So we had 1 hour total. So I had to do this in 5 minutes. I'm going to take just slightly longer than 5 minutes, but here's all I want you to do. Some combination of these things. I'm going through, by the way, the things that are also on the wall, and it's also on page 2 of your handout, if you want to follow along. Yeah, yours is better colored than mine. And here's what I recommend doing. For sure, what I want you to do is see, is there one of these that just kind of like buzzes or fizzles or shimmers for me. Okay, all of us have all of these aspects to us, but is there one that just kind of, and is that your Enneagram type? Maybe, or maybe it's just where you are today. But also then let the whole thing kind of wash over you like a beautiful waterfall of love. And just recognize, oh my goodness, the world is full of these qualities. And so what we're doing is we're practicing what I was talking about at the beginning, because it's easy to say, okay, there's a lot to be afraid of in the world. If you say there's a lot to be afraid of in the world, do you know what you will see when you look out in the world? A lot to be afraid of. Okay, that's what I mean by everything outside of us is actually a reflection of us. If we want to see fear, we will see fear everywhere. You know, they talk about the magic of like you want a red car, then imagine a red car, and then you see red cars everywhere. Well, it's true in the negative too. You want to see fear, you will see fear everywhere. You want to see love and gifts in the world? Let me ask that again. Do you want to see love and gifts in the world? You'll see it. And the Enneagram is just like a lens to look through to help focus it a little bit. Here are some of the beautiful gifts in the world. Where is it? Goodness, sacredness. Type 1 comes to teach us about goodness and sacredness and seeing the world the way it is supposed to be. Type 1s tend to have a certain amount of inner discipline and that gift of self-control. And when they combine this with serenity, that is a beautiful gift for all of us. Type 2 comes to teach us about love and sweetness. People on Zoom, I have these hanging on the wall in this room, which you're not going to be able to see. But they're also the same as are on your handout. And you do the same thing, folks on Zoom. Which one really shimmers for you? Type 2 comes to teach us about how to love. They tend to be nurturers, caretakers, the kind of people who know our needs even before we do. That they love in abundance. It just flows out of them and their heart. And that when this comes out of the virtue of humility, this is a love that includes everyone, including themselves. Type 3s come to teach us about hope. And I put up on the wall success and competence, because the qualities, you know, if you see, notice on your sheet, the qualities are preciousness and radiance and value. And most people don't know to go to the qualities that say preciousness and radiance and value. So for type 3, it's actually one level below that. Like the way I try to express my value in the world tends to be through success and competence. But really what this is about, the real gift of type three for us is to say, everyone is amazing and precious and has value. And when a type three combines that with authenticity, like I know who I really am and I have value and I see the value in you, that's type three. Type four comes to teach us about authenticity and depth. When we can really be not just with the surface of who we are, but the depth of who I really am, then I remember and like all of my creativity can spill out into the world. Type fours tell the truth. There's no faking it. And their virtue is, the word is equanimity. Like all things are equal. It feels like this has so much weight. You know, this doesn't. Oh, actually, I hold all things in balance. Type five comes to teach us about clarity and knowing. I can make connections. I'm not limited by conventional ways of thinking or seeing the world. Type fives are sensitive and deep. And when they share their knowledge, they do it out of the spirit of generosity. Type sixes come to teach us about guidance, about being awake, like really being present for life. And they combine that with this sense of loyalty. Like when we're all awake, we are better together than alone. Type six reminds us. And type sixes who are always tempted to let their anxiety lead them, when they can rest in faith and trust, then they really become connected in the way they want to. Type sevens teach us about joy, about freedom. Type sevens can make anything seem fun and appealing. They see possibilities in absolutely all things. They're filled with imagination and enthusiasm and options. Type sevens are excited. And their virtue is this word, and a great word, sobriety. And it doesn't mean they're not drinking. It means they are grounded in who they really are. So tempting for, so the grass is always greener over there and over there. And actually, like, oh no, all those possibilities, I don't have to go anywhere, but I can be right here in full grounded sobriety. Type eights come to teach us about truth. Okay, did I say this out loud? I'm a type eight. Type eights are going to come out and say, what if there's nothing wrong with you? Let me tell you exactly how personalities work. Type eights, like, we not only want to know the truth, we want everyone to know the truth, and we will put our full life energy into that effort. We want everyone to be alive, and we will fight the good fight. And we will do it best when we remember our virtue of innocence. It's really another version of asking that opening question that I asked. What if we are all innocent? There's a good choir backing right there. People on Zoom, we've got a choir practicing down the hall who's doing a nice accompaniment to some of this. Type nine, final one, come to teach us, type nines come to teach us about peace, connection, wholeness, like the circle. No one is closer to the middle than anyone else. Everyone is on the circle. Everyone is included. Type nines are sensitive to everyone and everything. They can hold it all in the circle of their own bodies and hearts. They can see every perspective and help to bring it together. And their virtue is right action, not getting lost in the togetherness, but knowing how to move forward, holding the all in all. Okay? Just so you can start getting nervous about it, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to get up and move around. And I want you to actually choose, you know, there's strength and aliveness, wholeness, peace, goodness, sacredness, love, sweetness, success, competence, preciousness, value, authenticity, depth, knowledge, clarity, awakeness, loyalty, and joy and freedom. And so the people on Zoom, you're going to go into breakout rooms. And I want you on Zoom and us in this room to actually move. You don't have to go right by it, but in the vicinity of the, again, whatever's feeling right for you to, you're not choosing an Enneagram type. You're choosing at this moment, a quality that connects with me is this. And then I want you to get together with another person. So one-on-one is great, but if a group of three emerges, you know, you are absolutely, you're in charge of yourself for the next, 8 minutes or so. Welcome back. And Zoom people, feel free to just listen and reflect, but also if you want to put a reflection in the chat, to your fellow Zoomers, please feel free to do that. Okay, I would love to hear from two or three people. What was like a new insight or a connection? And as usual, like you could say what someone else said and how it affected you, but please don't share on the beautiful, amazing thing that someone else said. What's something, what's a connection that happened for you? Somebody, anybody? Yes.
My type gives me the strength to meet the challenges that have unfolded in my life.
My type gives me the strength to meet the challenges that have unfolded in my life. And was there something about the quality that you talked about that has been especially helpful for you?
The balance of fear and security. Yeah. And overwhelmed by fear and not understanding the security side of it.
Yes. I like that too, that what fear is trying to tell us is, I would like to be safe. I would like to not be hit by the Mack truck. I would like to be safe in my home and with my people. And that is just a beautiful human need. Like, can fear lead to all kinds of problems in our lives? Let me ask that again. Can fear lead to all kinds of problems in our lives? Yes, it can. But all it is a warning bell saying like, oh, I've got a need for security. And if we, like, here's how addiction works, right? Pretty much any addiction, like, oh, there's just this thing, sugar, you know, fill in the blank. Sugar is not evil, but like, if it's the only way I know to feel secure, that's a problem. And then that's an addiction. And then I'm, instead of knowing and having some ways that feel good to me and the people around me, I use this thing outside of myself to try to fill this in here. But that doesn't make the thing in here, like security in this case, a bad thing. Beautiful, thank you. Anybody else? There were two good, yes, thank you.
I shared about authenticity and then talking about, you shared the story about wanting to throw your baby, how Alexander like trust you, because it made me think of nine steps in our recovery program, how, you know, we share those nine step promises come true, and then we share our experiences, and we don't wish to turn our back on the past anymore because it's some asset. How we connection with quickly and not.
Yeah, that's such a beautiful word, making a connection with authenticity and how sharing what's real. That was not how I was planning to start. And it wasn't anything that Chris said. She's just making beautiful announcements, really straightforward, but just hearing that and seeing all you come in called me to this deeper place. Now, as I say that out loud, I realize 20 years ago, I was not allowing myself to be called to a deeper place. And so I'm like a little bit patting myself on the back of saying like this work, this journey inside of ourselves, we can learn skills that we do not have today. So if you're hearing me talk about some things like what if we lived without fear? Like not today. But that's it. What if the only real thing is love? Again, okay, let's say you only 5% believe that. If you can step into that 5%, that 5% will grow. You are worth planting seeds in. And I'm a seed planter. I'm going to be throwing seeds at you all night. So it's up to you. How fertile a soil do you want to be? Yes.
Hi, there was something I related to that someone said about death and grief. And that I have lost several important people recently in my life. And in a way, it's all connected with this metaphor that there's beauty and just appreciating those relationships. You know, I miss those people because I love them and they're nothing. And just the depth of the experience, you know, it's kind of what I relate to.
The depth, I'm just repeating things for the people online in case they're not getting it. The depth of experience, including being open even to the beauty of grief. That's actually like a quote about type fours. I'm married to a type four. Now like I said, I'm opening up to this, you know, inner self and, you know, being open, but mostly I'm a doer. Like let's go, let's study the Enneagram. Let's paint my house. Let's go. I'm a doer. And my type four wife is not an undoer, but she's someone who sees the beauty of the depth, even in the really hard emotions. I'm like, why spend any time there at all? Let's go do something. And like, why? Because there's beauty there too. Because actually to be authentically me, I need to be a doer and a feeler. And I did. I told you some of the stories. Like it's I don't even have like real clear stories from my childhood, but I somehow learned it wasn't okay. Wasn't okay as a boy. It wasn't okay as me to be emotional. So I learned that real deep. And so now I have to relearn. I have to recover learning. Oh, there's a time for grief. I'm always the type of guy who moving on, forget those people. I'm like, don't even grieve. Beautiful insight. Let me give another lens into the Enneagram. The Enneagram is really, there's nine because it's three sets of three over and over and over again. And you can see, again, I'm looking at page two. You're assigned, I'm not going to like look at page three and four, which has the paragraphs on it at all. That's really your reading assignment if you want it, okay? To read the types. And I think Chris said it, I was starting to get all fluttery, so I probably missed some, but I'm coming back next month. So we are going to go a little bit deeper into the types. But here's one of, and in your color, I can see you have colored on your page too. And so you can see that types 8, 9, and 1 are in the body center, belly center. And types 2, 3, and 4 are in the heart center. And types 5, 6, and 7 are in the head center. Now raise your hand if you don't have a head. It's not saying eights or only, like I've got a heart and I've got a head. It's saying, where is my primary energy? coming from. So let me just do a quick explanation of these three energies. And my thesis here is partly, if you start to get in touch with this main energy of your type, you'll see how that energy is operating every second of the day. Okay, this is not one of those occasional things. It's one of those prime drivers. And if you're, sometimes you can even see it, because head types will sort of like go through life sort of like this. Like they're literally, they're thinking. My son, not the son I almost threw against the wall, my other son. I don't tell my sons that I talk about them this way. Actually, I have told my oldest son that I tell this story regularly. The Enneagram completely changed my relationship to my kids. It was the biggest impact it had on me. I mean, it was mostly getting to know me, but it was seeing, oh my goodness, I parent with huge, massive energy all the time. And my kids don't always need huge, massive energy. Sometimes they just need me to be there like with heart energy. Like I don't even know how to do that. So I've got to then start to learn how to do that. So I said you can almost see it. People going through mostly thinking, and that my middle son, you know, right now he's dropped out of college. He's super smart, but dropped out of college. And now to apply for, he's got several places he would like to work, but he's so overthinking every possibility that he cannot act. So in each one of these places, there are so many gifts, or they can trap us. Okay, that's just one of the basic learnings of the Enneagram. I can like so many gifts and aliveness and strength, or I can get trapped in my own need to always be strong, to always need everyone to be alive. See, so right now, Phil's gonna take a breath. Because I want to drag you all kicking and screaming into healing. That's my default mode. But what I actually want is to connect. What I actually want is freedom. What I actually want is love. And some of my natural gifts are exactly what's needed. But also, I've got some other options. So let's start 8, 9, and 1 with the gut center. And again, everyone's got a gut. So actually, everyone put your hand on your belly. There you go. Feel that? You feel whether that's kind of comfortable or whether it's shameful, and you're wondering if the people next to you are now looking at your belly. You can think about, oh yeah, I'm addicted to sugar too, or you know, whatever it is you're thinking. But mostly, like, we talk about the gut instinct, right? We have a whole, and now we even know from science, there's more neurons in our guts than in our mind. And there's a whole passageway of information flowing up and down from our guts through our hearts and our minds. So it's like our smarts don't just come from here, but all of us have a gut instinct. Can I listen to my intuition? Can I know who I am? See, this feels so natural. I'm listening to my gut all the time, both when I pick up the donut, but also just when I make decisions about what to do in life. I think of myself as pretty smart. It's actually almost all down here. Okay. And 8s and 9s and 1s will do this very differently. But what our guts want is for us to be able to do what we want to do. It's like the toddler. I want to do what I want to do. I want autonomy is the big word. And when I can't do what I want to do, how do I feel? Angry. Maybe rageful. I'm thinking throwing my kid across the room. And it's true of anyone. You might think I don't feel angry, but you do. Anytime that you can't do it, and you might push it down, it might come out as frustration. It might zip out sideways. But all of us in our guts, we want to do what we want to do. And then we might want to decide, okay, do I actually want to do that or not? Okay, I don't need that third donut. Right? So then I can like get my mind in gear and start to make decisions. But that's only if I can pause and be aware. Be aware. Oh, right now I want to be sleeping, not carrying my kid. But actually, I want my kid to be alive, and I want to be not in prison even more than I want sleep. See, that's engaging the wholeness of who I am from our hearts. Go ahead and put your hand on your heart. You feel how different that energy is? There's a whole nother realm of intelligence, and it's in our heart. And what we want in our hearts, don't say anything out loud, but just think, what do you want in your, what does your heart want? What we want in our hearts is connection, but it's also to know who I am, down to the depth and authenticity. And when I don't feel connected or I forget who I am, what I tend to feel is, I don't know, I picture myself as a little child walking through like the state fair, holding my mother's hand, and then I lose the hand because I see cotton candy or something that I want. And then I look around and I can't find my mother. And there's that panic. Oh my goodness, like where's my mama? And there's a panic and I think I lost her. I think it might be my fault. So it's shame, but it's really panic that leads to shame. And so that sort of mix, that's what happens in our hearts. And it's a completely natural and beautiful reaction, unless we get caught in it over and over again and we become paralyzed with shame. But all of us from our hearts, and especially for 2, 3s, and 4s. And finally, from the head center, actually go ahead, just put your hands on your head for just a minute. So most of us are aware of our heads because, you know, headiness and smarts and needing to learn, you know, long division and so on, and boom, 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 actually using, we're kind of aware of what that energy feels like. And maybe we think we're good at it or we think we're not good at it, but the head wants security. And when we don't feel secure, we feel, we've been over this, afraid, fear. Here. So now think just really quick, we're almost done. Which one of those most resounded with you? See what I'm doing? I'm half of what I'm doing here today is just trying to get you to be listening to yourself. Like, who cares what Phil says? You know, I'm going to have a cookie and go home in 20 minutes. You're going to go home with yourself. You're going to wherever you are with yourself. And so when you're lying in bed tonight, you can be listening to yourself. As you think about recovering yourself or your relationships, like, wow, I tend to lead with my gut way more than I was aware. Or like, I interpret the traffic on I-94 as a threat to my autonomy. I was choosing to be at Hennepin Avenue United Methodist Church at 6:05. And these people are preventing me. Being like, I can interpret everything through autonomy. My son is attacking my autonomy by dying of starvation. Okay, that's crazy, but it's actually what I do. I suspect if you're a heart type, you interpret everything through, is it connected to me or not? Is this making me look good or not? Am I being seen as I want to be seen or not? I suspect you're doing that every second. If you're a head type, you will be asking yourself 5,800 times a day, am I safe? Am I secure? I go outside to the garage, will I be safe? Will I be secure? My child goes off to school, will they be safe? Will they be secure? In today's world, are we safe? Are we secure? Super legitimate question. But it's not the only question. So just to be pain, it's my, here are the two assignments, and then I'll see if there's any questions. One is to read these paragraphs. And maybe you've been, you know, reading this book or something, you don't need to read these paragraphs. And so that's just to see, oh, I think I might be a type whatever. I went to the, you know, type 7 thing, and type 7 is feeling right. So I'm just going to do a little reading online about type 7 and kind of pay attention to myself, because we're coming right back to this next month. The other thing to do is pay attention to the energy. Where does your energy tend to go? What questions do you tend to ask yourself? Especially, is it mostly about, let me back up. Here's the most baseline assignment I want you to do. Can you just start listening to yourself? You are worth listening to. And I know sometimes we get to a place, and I reached it there with my son, where like, oh, I need to like not listen to myself. I need some outer input, right? That's a completely legit place to be. But then as you start to get outer input, it's relearning how to listen to yourself. And so I am a living example of an almost son killer who has learned to listen to his heart and let it flutter when a whole bunch of women in recovery come into a room. Okay, I've had tons and tons and tons of training for my head. So then I had to just start listening to it a little bit more honestly. But most of my work is listening to my heart. If I listen to my heart, all the rest is like cake. Is there a part of you you're not listening to? What if there is nothing wrong with you? Everyone take a deep breath. Everyone smile. Notice how you're feeling when you smile. Okay, I know the way that I lead presentations doesn't really lead well to questions. It more leads to like existential, like either crisis or openings. But does anyone, so it could be an input or a question or anything. Yes.
I'm curious, I don't know, maybe the book goes deeper into it. What is the symbolism between the connections that you make among those?
Zoom people see, yeah, just barely. Yeah. The starting symbol is the circle. And it means we're all one. As I was saying, there's just no difference. An eight is no closer to the center than the two, than the four. It also means we all move around, right? That everyone does have a home base. I think I was born an eight. I think the stories for me as an infant are clearly eight stories. Me like calling out in church when I was 3 years old, you know, I have been an eight and I think I will always be an eight. But the more I open up to these things, the more I go around. Now there's these inner lines, and there's not time to explain the whole system today, but it's true that like as an eight, I get this invitation by this line to go over to love and sweetness of the two. You know, I get another invitation to come down here to the clarity and the illumination of the five. So they're just growth direction. Okay, so the, you know, a three, when I'm being really intense and success driven, I can also remember like the wholeness of the nine. And actually, we're all one already. I don't even need to inspire everyone. We're all connected already. Or I can remember the loyalty of the six, and I don't need to be better than everyone, but actually I can be, that I need other people to support me. So that's how I think of the lines there. Most of your work is gonna be in your own type, but built into the system, if you keep working with it long enough, are some pathways to grow. Great question. Anyone else? The choral music is completely working for me.
So is it possible to, you know, in your 20s, really have a hand on, oh, I'm a two or whatever it is. If you were looking at that, and then by the time you get older and have had thousands of experiences, that you might look at that and go, no, I'm really a solid. So do you change?
So the official Enneagram way to talk about it is no, and I'm also no, but obviously at different parts of our life, we're aware of different things. So when I first started the Enneagram, just a little over 20 years ago, I typed myself as a nine. I was just out of seminary. I was becoming a pastor. I mean, you can see how I talk. I'm about love, and I'm about connection. I'm about the wholeness of all things. And so like those are all nine words. And how do I do them? Like a freaking eight. Okay. And so wholeness and being and unity. Yes, yes, yes. The nines are like, yes. And I'm like, yes. So it took me 10 years, and somebody, we were doing a conference together about nonviolent communication, and she came in and she knew me for like 30 seconds. And she said, you know, the Enneagram? I said, yes, I do. And she said, you're an eight, right? I'm like, no, I'm a nine, but let me go back and look. And so I reread the chapter and I'm like, shit. So that, I think it's more about the shit moments than I think it actually changes. But I give that with all gentleness. Who understands themselves when they're 20? Hey, you 20-year-olds? Yeah, take a deep breath. At the same time, I know young people, all my kids have now studied the Enneagram, and it has super changed their lives, and it's amazing. So I'm not shutting off the path to 20-year-olds. 20-year-olds are amazing. Just because we were a mess doesn't mean they're a mess. That makes sense? Are you raising your hand? Yeah, you want to say anything?
I have taken this test before online, and I've gotten 7 at one point, I got 9 at one point. But today, when you were going around and describing the way that you described it, the only one that stuck out to me was 5. But then when I looked at the words, I'm like, oh, I don't feel like you're on that. So I was like, I went to 7. But I, like, my gut was telling me the way that you described 5, as we said, is that like, what does that mean?
That's super normal is what that is. It's a new, if this is new to you, it's not all supposed to click into place. And so what I love about what you're saying is this openness. Like, oh, I'm picking up that. And there is no test for the Enneagram. There's tests you can take, but they're not like a math test where there's a right answer and a wrong answer. All it is, oh, now I learned a little. Okay, I've got this. I like possibilities and freedom and joy, like a type 7. And I also like this, but oh, there is something about that knowledge and clarity and the illumination and not thinking conventionally. Now, 8s don't think conventionally, 7s don't think conventionally, 5s don't. So there's so much overlap. And so it's just being open. Again, the most important thing is having a new conversation with yourself. And then if this provides a useful tool for you to take that conversation deeper, bonus.
Should all these numbers, should they all get along?
I think everyone should get along. All in favor of everyone getting along? Yes. That was the easiest question I've ever gotten.
No,
of course not. Oh my goodness, is my type 4 wife super irritating with depth and authenticity? Like, you know, and so I'm joking, but I'm not. And my 3 kids to know, oh, like to just meet that when we can start to really listen to ourselves, then we can start to really listen to other people. Whereas otherwise, what are we all doing most of the time? Projecting all of our crap out on the world, hearing it reflected back to us, and then being either angry or full of shame or pissed about it. That's how most of us are living our life most of the time. See, you're getting me all worked up at quarter after. projection is what we're doing. That's like when I said everything outside of you is a reflection of yourself. It's because we're just throwing it out there. And not surprisingly, it's coming right back in our face. And then we're upset. And then when we can actually own ourselves and we're not throwing all that junk out there, but we're open, that changes everything. So I could say something like, don't start typing all your friends and your roommates and your mother and your spouse and da 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 da, but you'll do that. But I will say, just do it with as much compassion as you can. And mostly remember to do the work yourself. Okay, one more time. Let's all take a deep breath. Okay, I need to stretch too. So I invite you, if you want to just like, let's see how open we can be in this moment. Maybe keeping your hands open. Let's take another deep breath. If you can, breathe in some love for yourself right now, but if that's too much, how about just asking yourself, self, are we willing to have a new conversation with each other? Let's start right now. Okay? Thank you all.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, Phil, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. I don't know about you guys, but I can't wait to come back next month and learn more. So a recording of tonight's presentation is going to get posted on the Women in Recovery's website, as well as the materials that you receive. So if you had friends that wanted to attend tonight but were unable to, or you want to share a little bit about what you've learned, you can revisit the recording and relearn about what was discussed tonight, and you can also share it with others. So next month on the fourth Wednesday, we will be covering part two of our study of the Enneagram. It'll be on October 26th. It'll be at this location at the same time. And next month, we're going to be focusing on freeing ourselves from the prisons of our own making. Yeah. So thank you all for joining us tonight, and we really look forward to seeing you next month. Let's close this meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Peace. Thank you. Thank you, Zoom viewers. We're so glad you could be with us tonight. Have a good night.